serving veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes on this Memorial Day weekend 2020. Just saying those words reminds me of Memorial Day weekend 10 years ago. In front of a Walmart in Mesa, Arizona, I met up with two ex-prisoners of war who had gone out in the desert heat to hand out poppies for remembrance, a Memorial Day tradition that goes all the way back to France during World War I. One of those veterans was Dale Shabilsky. 75 years ago this week, more than 2 weeks after VE Day, he was about to finally taste freedom again. Dale had joined the Army Air Corps as a 17-year-old in his native Nebraska, serving as a radio man and gunner aboard B-24 Liberators with the 456th Bomb Group flying out of Italy. He had already survived some pretty close calls before his 33rd and final mission.
We got a citation. We made the trip all the way back from Auschwitz and Poland to Italy on two engines without jettisoning anything. As a result of that, we got a recognition for not jettisoning and making the longest mission recorded on B-24 with two engines.
So you must have had a pretty hot shot pilot or some divine intervention or something, huh?
Some of both.
And I imagine when you did touch those wheels down, there's a pretty big sense of relief or maybe applause throughout the plane or what?
I was shooting flares out of the top of the plane so that the ground crew would be alerted to the fact that we didn't know if our wheels would collapse when we hit or not. But fortunately, everything gave us a smooth landing, and none of us were hurt.
Think there are a few prayers said in those moments?
Definitely. I know I did.
And when you survive a situation like that, do you say, okay, I've been through that, maybe we can get through anything, or do you say, wow, that was crazy, one of these days, we're not going to make it back that way?
I never had a negative thought. I was ready to go whenever I needed to go. And I did a lot of praying.
That 33rd mission, what were you guys supposed to do that day? What went wrong, and how did you become a prisoner?
The Germans at that time were pulling back. We were out after another marshaling yard in Linz, Austria. Well, when we entered, I could tell that they were throwing everything up that they could. And there's three different kinds of flak. The regular flak, a red flak, and a white flak. Well, a white flak is a phosphorus flak. When it hit the airplane sides, it just eats the skin off the airplane. We had two engines knocked out over the target and one after that. You don't fly a B-24 on one engine. So we took a quick boat. We had a boat to either parachute out right then or try to crash land. So we've all voted for crash land because we'd heard too many stories about parachuting.
What kind of stories had you heard?
The people on the ground were meeting us with pitchforks and just killing us right there on the way down. Well, we were down to about 5,000 feet, and we just couldn't hold the ground. We ended up in Gwyra, Hungary, and I can't tell you how far that is from Linz, Austria, but we crash landed in Gwyra, Hungary. I had been hit over the eye, over my right eye, and in my seat. Our tail gunner got hit in both knees, and he was unable to get out of the turret without help. So, yeah, there was a lot of panic. Our ball turret gunner, he could not bring the ball turret back up, so they had to help pull him up out of there. And needless to say, our intercom system was gone wild. We had to tell people, cool, so you can get messages from the pilot and myself. Part of my responsibilities was to detonate the radar equipment to burn it up. And the bomb site, we had to detonate it, burn it up.
You didn't want the Germans seeing what technology you had.
That's right. Also, all the radio equipment had to be detonated and burned up. So that was my job, and it kept me pretty busy until we hit. It was like a hitting up against a brick wall, and it was just a sudden stop. As soon as we did, we saw all these civilian people coming out, rushing towards us. And your first thought is, goodbye. They weren't. They were friendly. We were flying a 13-man crew, and the 11 of them went one way. That none of them were wounded. I learned later on that they had gotten back to the base within 2 days. The tail turret gunner we had to leave behind because both knees were completely shot out. So he was left with the Germans. And later on, I found out that he also did a lot better than I did, that they replaced both of his knees. The Germans replaced both of his knees. He had steak and lamb and all that to eat. I had to go a different way. To this day, I swear I went to some kind of a church basement. And a man came in, and he took 22 stitches over my eye. He cleaned out as much of the flak out of my seat as he could. And after that, the five men from the local underground says, "We need to take you on. We can't keep you here because the Germans are on their way in." So anyhow, we walked from Gwire, Hungary to Budapest, Hungary. At Budapest, Hungary, I gave myself up to what I thought was our allies, the Russians. As I approached, it was a big pond, and there was these soldiers all around it. And I go in with my hands up saying, "Amerikansky, Amerikansky." Well, that didn't register. Underground felt like I should do away with my uniform. So they burned it and gave me civilian clothes to wear. Well, anyhow, when I got there, the only thing I could surmise is that the Russians felt like I was German because I was in civilian clothes, a blonde, blue-eyed. I had Army 45, which they took. My dog tags they took because they just said, well, that, you know, I got them from somebody else. The only thing I had that was GI was my shorts, undershorts. They stripped me down to my shorts, tied my hands behind my back, and pointed to a building which was about 2 football fields away. It was a cobble field. Well, being barefooted and your hands tied in your back, you don't do too good, especially when they try to run you. I'd fall down, they'd come along, they'd kick me, and they'd hit me with the butts of their guns. By the time I got to the building, I had 4 teeth broken out, a busted nose, 3 ribs, 5 toes. Oh, and the wound over my eye opened again. I was a mess by the time I got there.
What a nightmare. And you told me you never had a negative thought the entire time. How do you not have a negative thought in that situation? That's horrible.
At that time, all you're thinking is pray. We got to the building, and they just made me take a shower. Well, I thought, gee, I've read about this shower, you know, where it's poison to come down on you. Well, it wasn't. It was a real nice, hot, cold shower. And the idea was to wash the blood off of me. Well, all they did is let the water come down. My hands were still tied, so I couldn't do anything more. After they decided I was under the shower long enough, they pulled me out, went to this building and in a room, and they had a stool or a bench. They had me get up on the bench, untied my hands from the back of me, and tied me up on a beam with my hands over my head. There was 2 women and 3 men come in, and they just started talking. I couldn't understand them, and they couldn't understand me. I kept saying, "American consulate, American consulate." Anyhow, that didn't work too well. Finally, they brought in a officer, at least that's what I assumed, and he could talk broken English. And he had told me that if I didn't tell them the truth and what they wanted to know, that I would not see tomorrow. He pointed to a woman, and he said, "She will get the truth out of you." Well, what they did, they put a bunch of electrodes on you. It must have been a low current, because when they activated it, my whole body, you just lose control of everything. They'd leave it on, I'd pass out, they'd wake me up, and do it, turn it on again. And I don't know how many times this occurred, but I finally decided I'm going to make up a story. And I said, "There's 10,000 airplanes ready to come over to you, and you better be ready." That did not go over good. So I said, "Maybe I'm wrong, maybe it was 100. That went over all right. Then they were saying something else, this woman, and I couldn't understand her. And so she got real mad at me, and she had a rifle, and she came to the back of me and just really beat me up in my back. Came back in front and stuck the barrel of the gun right in my face. Well, I still couldn't understand her. All I could say is, "American consulate." It ended up that this man said, "Okay, we're going to leave you here overnight and let you think about it. And when we come back, you better be ready to tell us." Well, again, I don't know how long, but I know I was there long enough where I no longer had any feeling in my arms. It was just completely, you know, like they were dead. They had turned out the lights, so it was pure dark in there. Whenever they came back, they showered me with water, woke me up. Again, I couldn't couldn't feel anything. And I thought, well, go ahead and kill me. You know, what have I got to lose? And they decided that I was telling them everything I could. Well, when they let me down on the floor, I just collapsed. And they drugged me out of there. And I don't know how. They put me in like what I call a closet, because it wasn't long enough for me to lay down and stretch out, but I could curl up. And they kept me in there. Then they came and got me and tried to interrogate me again. Of course, I was too weak to say anything. They take me back, and all I had to in there with me was a bucket. Once a day, I had a tin can full of some kind of liquid and green stuff. Once a day. That went on for a period of time. I kept saying American consulate, and finally the war was over. Finally got an audience with American consulate. Well, they interviewed me, and they said, well, it's going to take about a week to 10 days to verify that what you said is true, because they check your family and all that kind of stuff. Well, they did come back, but on the interim time, the one officer said that if I said anything about how I was treated, I wouldn't see tomorrow. And he said, I'll be there when you talk to him. And you say one thing out of line, you're dead. So when they came back, they interviewed me, and they said, yeah, we're going to set you out for free. This was 30 days at least, longer than that, about 2.5 months, that all this transpired. Finally, I got to, they freed me. The soldier that was there wished me luck. They had a banquet for me. They had a big roast pig on the table, full pig, and they had poured me a goblet full of what I thought was water. I didn't know any better, and man, having not had any water for so long, I bottomed up. Well, I passed out, vodka. I truthfully don't know how long I was passed out, but when I woke up, I was back in this little closet room, and I knocked on the door until somebody came, and they finally gave me some clothes that I could put on. They were kind of big. Anyhow, we had the banquet again. I don't know if it was the same roast pig or not, but anyhow, there was another roast pig, and this time they poured me this glass, and accidentally on purpose, I hit it, and it fell on the floor. Well, I never drank anymore. Because I was a guest of honor, I got the first slice off the pig. Well, it was 100 total fat. Well, I thought to myself, I can't eat that. I haven't had any food for months. So somehow that slipped off on the floor, and I got a piece of ham later. Anyhow, about a week after that banquet, the American people arranged for me to go down to the seaport in Kiev. I got on this English ship. We went from Kiev over the Black Sea back to Italy. Well, when I got back to the base, the base was deactivated. There was a dentist apprentice and a couple of the base commander and a couple others in one tent. Well, I came down with malaria. They did the best they could for me then. And the colonel said, well, do you think you'd be ready to fly in about a week? I said, as far as I'm concerned, I'm ready to go now. After about a week, we did fly, and we went back to the States. My folks had been told early that I was missing in action, and then they came and said I was KIA, and they paid them the $10,000. And of course, none of this I knew about. So anyhow, when I got back to the States, I called home. You know, well, my brother answered the phone, and he said, "Who is this?" And I said, "Jack, you dummy, I'm your brother, Dale." And he said, "You're dead. We were told you were dead." Well, that hit me like he must have got hit by telling I was my. Anyhow, he told me that, well, I better call back in about an hour or so because he had to prepare the folks. My mom was not well. And I said, "Jack, I can't. I don't have any money. All I got is clothes on my back," and then we weren't very good. So he said, "Give me a number and I'll call you back in about an hour." So that happened. And then I got to talk to my folks. All I can say is that the good Lord blessed me. And being younger than that, I guess you can survive some of those things. I didn't think I would.
But He did. And 75 years ago this week, Dale Shabilsky's parents went from believing he would be one of those remembered on Memorial Day to hearing their son's voice once again. That's all the time we have on this edition of Hometown Heroes. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that on Memorial Day and every day, freedom is not free.